We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back. Mike Maxton for Chad Hartman this afternoon. And since I heard him speak, I have been dying to get him in as a guest. And this is when I love my job, when you get to be with interesting people telling interesting stories that maybe people haven't heard before, and it enlightens them. John Turnipseed is the head of Urban Ventures, and we will get to that as this interview progresses, but it's only a part of. You have to understand where he's been and who he was before he was who he is today, if that makes sense, because it is captivating, it is mind-boggling, it is overwhelming, it leaves you perplexed, happy, interested, enthralled, and I had the good fortune of hearing him speak. As I mentioned, one night at the hospitality house, I had heard of him, but I hadn't heard his speech before. John, thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me.
And we're going to go back. We're going to do this chronologically, so people the same way that I heard it, because I didn't know what was coming. You moved to Minnesota from where?
Selma, Alabama.
And how old were you?
7 years of age.
7 years of age, and you came for a quote-unquote better life.
Better life.
And your dad was up here already. And mom brought the kids up here.
Yes.
And so now you're semi-excited about the new environment or what?
It was scary. This was the big city. I was in, yeah, it was overwhelming.
So you didn't know what you were getting into. You just remember being kind of scared, and you're what, first, second grade?
Let me see, I was seven, probably second grade. Mm-hmm. Funny accent, funny name, John Turnipseed. No big brothers, little skinny kid. Was bullied from my first day.
Where are you? What part? Minneapolis?
South Minneapolis.
South Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And your dad's waiting for you up here.
Yes.
And you're excited to see your dad again, right? Be reunited with him.
Yes, I was.
Until you found out who your dad really was.
Until I found he changed. He was a deacon in the church down south, sang in the church choir. He was up here about 2 years by himself, and all of a sudden he was different. He was sort of an abusive male. With five girlfriends, and he drank and gambled and all kinds of stuff that I've never seen him do before. So he was not my dad anymore. He was the dude.
He was a monster.
Yes.
So you come in 7 years old, and all of a sudden you're scared of this guy.
Yeah, he's not my father anymore.
On top of that, he's abusive to your mother.
Every day.
Which in this case meant what?
Every day meant that every day we knew when the sun went down that he would come and beat my mother. So... You know, in the summer, you know, it was 8 o'clock at night, but he'd come home and he'd beat her.
For no reason, or would there be an argument always,
no,
or what?
Never an argument. My mother never, she was scared to death of him. You know, he'd tie her to a pole in the basement and beat her. We would just be in our room.
Listening to this?
Listening.
Hearing it?
Knew it was coming.
Loved your mother to death?
Yes.
Couldn't do anything to help her?
Nothing. We tried to nail the doors shut and all kinds of stuff, put chairs behind the door, but he always got in.
So as you get older and this anger starts to build inside you and probably confusion, mm-hmm. You're hanging out with who?
The neighborhood alligators, you know, the pimps, drug dealers.
You're an easy for them, huh?
Yes.
To recruit?
Pedophiles. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy down the street was a pedophile and...
Explain your first experience as best you can there, because you told the story that day.
Yeah, he sort of watched me. I collect pop bottles to feed my family, and he had six of them, I think it was, and he said, "Hey, Johnny, come here." He knew my name. Here's six pop bottles, and would you like some White Castles? And I said, I didn't know what they were. I said, yeah. So he took me to White Castles. He bought eight of them, which were 12 cents a piece at the time.
Hamburgers.
Yes, and he said, two of them are for you, and you got five brothers and a mom, so one each for them. But I want you to eat yours here. And I ate them in his house. And then after I ate my two hamburgers, he told me he wanted them back. And I said, well, I don't have them. And then he raped me. So So now I was, you know, not 8-year-old kid.
And he's how old?
Yeah, I don't know. He's probably about 450, yeah. You know. He ended up doing it to another kid that had a dad, and they ran him out of the neighborhood.
What happened? I mean, so he tells his dad?
Well, he did that same thing to another kid that had a
strong father.
And the father went over there and beat him pretty badly, and the guy left the neighborhood.
And that's the last that you saw or heard of him?
The last I saw of him.
But now you got PTSD going on, basically, you don't know about, right?
Yeah. I was 8 years old, and I had the mind of a murderer. I was going to kill him and my dad.
When you had rage.
Big enough. Yeah.
So what happens as you get into 9, 10, 11, 12 years old?
By the time I was 12 years old, I had my first gun. A cousin came up from Chicago and gave me my first gun and taught me how to rob people to feed myself. And so he would take me to like a barber shop. I'd walk in, pull the gun. They'd give me the money. I'd give him the money. He'd give me $10. And $10 was a lot of money back then. I could buy 2 packs of bologna, 2 loaves of bread, some mayonnaise, you know, a 6-pack of pop, a bag of potato chips that me and my brothers could eat for the weekend. So every weekend I was doing a robbery.
In Minneapolis?
In Minneapolis.
And not getting caught, not being...
Well, it didn't last. It lasted about 6 months. And I finally got caught and went to the Hennepin County Home School.
At age 12?
Around 12, yes.
What was that like?
That was, you know, around kids that were sort of rough and tough, and it was a crazy environment. But by then, I was pretty crazy, too.
Were you tough?
They called me Crazy Johnny.
Yeah?
Because I would, you know, if somebody looked at me funny, I would attack them. I attacked some of the staff at the Hennepin County Home School. They eventually put me out of there. They said I was too aggressive to be around the other kids, and so they sent me to a place called Red Wing State Reformatory.
Sure, and that was noted for, you know, yeah. Juvenile reform, right?
I mean, yeah, that's where they sent the...
That used to be, I remember growing up, they'd say they'll send you to Red Wing if that meant the ultimate that, you know, that you had committed before you were an adult.
Oh, absolutely. And Red Wing, you actually got a penitentiary number, a YC commitment, that because they knew you were going to the penitentiary sooner or later, so they had you see the parole board, actually. So I knew the parole board when I was 15 years of age.
Give him a number already because we know he'll reoffend, huh?
Yep. 28842.
That's what it was?
Yep.
Okay. So now you say, okay, so when does the reform start? Shortly after here? No. You ain't heard nothing yet. Johnny Turtipseed is in studio. We're visiting with him about his, what is an incredible journey to running Urban Ventures, which we will get to as well. More with him when we come back. News Talk 830 WCCO. John Turtipseed is our guest in studio talking about life of crime turned over to Urban Ventures, which we'll get to in a bit. But we're talking during the break some there, John, and when you're incarcerated, all of us ask these questions. We all hear these stories about drugs being sold and et cetera, et cetera. Is everybody on the take or who's on the take?
No, not everybody's on the take. But, you know, they're, you know, guards are human beings just like anybody else.
So you just got to find the right guards.
You find the right guards. There's money to be made. You know, you form relationships with them because you see them every day. You talk to them every day. And all of a sudden, you know, you talk them into one little thing at a time.
And you start charming, right?
Yes. Pretty soon they're making money. You're making money. Everybody's happy.
So you told me you're an inmate. There's 1,000 inmates, but only 80 of them are African American.
At that time, yes.
Okay, and so you figure out fairly early that you need to organize.
Yes.
What did you do?
Well, in St. Cloud Penitentiary, there were I knew 5 of my friends were there, and they all had murder convictions. Okay.
What were you in for at that time?
Aggravated armed robbery, and because I had sort of had a murder conviction that I didn't do, and they released me, that put me in a different category. They considered me, you know, a level A thug. So they allowed me, I pulled together 5 murderers, and they became my inner circle. And everybody else was scared of them, you know, because they had nothing to lose. And for their service, they got certain perks. You know, they got girls. We would smuggle women into the penitentiary.
And you do that again through, you find the right guards, you say, hey, look the other way.
We find the right guards. We formed a nonprofit to bring them in. You know, just people think inmates don't think or anything. We We have guys on the team. There's guys in there that could write up articles of incorporation, all that kind of stuff. And you form.
So you bring a nonprofit.
Yes.
You bring in girls. The girls bring drugs, and the girls are prostitutes.
Yes.
And then you find the right people to look the other way, so the prostitutes can do what they have to do to earn their money, etc.
Yes, absolutely. But you only do it for a select group of guys, and that keeps, you know, if you let a murderer have sex with a woman once a month, he will do anything. You know,
so now you've got a carrot you're dangling out there to the guys you need to control.
Yes.
And you've got it all organized, just like a business.
It's a business. Yes. It's absolute business.
And if you want sex once a month, guess what? We're going to do this.
You got to come. You got to be on the inner circle, and you have to show loyalty, and you have to do whatever I asked.
And you were the running it.
I was the head. I was called the prime minister. Yeah.
How long were you in there?
They actually put me out after 3 years. They sent me to another prison.
Because of that?
Because of my influence, yeah.
Did you reorganize the new prison?
No, I actually got paroled. It's sort of a long story. They accused me of something that I didn't do while I was in prison. And when the judge found out that they knowingly accused me of something I didn't do, instead of me suing the state of Minnesota, they just released me. I had 4 years left to do, and I walked out.
So even though you had done plenty?
Yeah.
The fact that you hadn't committed this one particular crime.
One particular crime.
You were able to plea bargain into, you let me go, I don't sue you.
Yes.
And that's all you wanted.
That's all I wanted. And they knew I'd be back, you know. But then a year and a half, I was in prison again.
For what?
I think another robbery. I've got 10 felonies, so, you know, I'm sorry.
Okay, and in the midst of this, you start getting educated.
Yes.
I mean, formal education.
While I was in prison, yes. They had a college program, University of Minnesota. They had Control Data Institute, where we learned computer programming, and I took full advantage of that.
So you end up being a teacher of computer programming.
Yes.
At MCTC.
Yes.
And you're on the faculty.
Yes.
And one day they come and they say, we want to see you.
Well, Tom Lydon of Channel 9 News brought cameras to my job. We were off campus because I taught disabled adults, and they brought cameras and everything, and they started telling everybody, do you know that John Turnipseed works here, and he's the leader of the Minneapolis Rolling 30s Bloods? He's an ex-prison leader. He's got 8 felonies. He's been indicted for manslaughter. I mean, and the students are, like, shocked. And so
they had no idea.
No, nobody knew.
Other faculty didn't know.
No.
I hate to question the background check of MCTC, but how did you become on their faculty if you had that in your background?
Well, like I said, they never ran a background check, and they I was part of an organization that partnered with them to teach their disabled adults severely.
So you slid right in.
Yeah, I slid right in and stuff, and they didn't do a background check on me. I don't know why they didn't. This is 30 years ago. Things were not like they are today.
Were you at a point? When you would, whether you were pimping out prostitutes, selling drugs, armed robbery, did you feel remorse after any of the acts, or do you get to a point where you feel everything's justified, or what?
When I was in that life, I had no conscience. So it's like I could shoot you in the face and have dinner with your mom the next day like nothing happened. Because
really?
That's part of gang culture. You have to beat and drive the conscience out of kids and stuff.
How do you do that?
It's a process. You expose them to things, and we have a thing called putting in work. You'll have them do stuff that they wouldn't normally do. You might have them shoot a dog, you know. Just to start. Walk them down that path. You might have them, one group of guys that I was associated with, you had to murder somebody to be a part of it, you know. I wasn't a part of that gang, but these were some of my friends.
Who would they murder? Someone that they had an axe to grind, or could it be anybody that was walking on the street?
It was innocent. It had to be an innocent person. One was a taxi cab driver. One was a newspaper guy from the Star and Tribune, I believe. And I forget where the other guy was, but they had to be completely innocent. They couldn't be...
To prove that you had big enough kahunas to be in that gang, huh?
And that... way the gang had information.
They had everything that they needed.
Yeah,
day, right.
So you could never turn state's evidence against them. So everybody in this particular gang had murder convictions of innocent people.
Is prostitution rampant in Minnesota? And is it much more pervasive than we realize?
It's absolutely. Minnesota is known. The Minnesota Pipeline, you know, Minnesota Girls. There's a street in Chicago and New York that's called the Minnesota Strip. And where Minnesota girls are taken, you know, from there. And it's,
taken or do they volunteer first? Who are they? Got to be vulnerable or something
vulnerable,
has to happen.
Runaways, you know, Minnesota.
How do you find them?
Staying out late at night, you see a young girl staying out late at night or, you know, hanging around places and stuff.
Start
you
asking
know.
Questions?
They sort of stick out, you know, mad at their parents, want to, you know, the lifestyle is exciting to them.
And you start listening for this stuff, right? I want nothing to do with my family. I'll never go back. You hear all the things you want to hear, right?
Yeah, the number one thing is that they don't have a strong father. If they have a strong father,
look out.
You'd stay away from that. Yep. Fathers get a little crazy about their daughters, yep. You know. And, you know, if they got a mom, you know, you just sort of bypass her. But not fathers. If that father shows up at your doorstep, you let the daughter go. And fathers can keep their daughters out of prostitution.
But you know that.
Yes.
So you just simply discard that one as being an applicant that's not going to get employment with you.
Yes. It's too many problems. You could die. You
and know. There's enough out there that I don't need to have that.
There's enough out there. And I don't know why that, you know, Minnesota girls were, they were sort of like a brand of prostitutes. I hope that didn't sound really crazy, but.
Is it still that way, do you think, or do you know, or not?
Not as much, but they were, you know, we were seen as pure and clean, and, you know, they were farm girls, you know, from Minnesota, naive and all that kind of stuff, and they commanded a higher price.
Unbelievable. Johnny Turnipseed. And so now you say he's going to get his life turned around. Well, not quite yet. We'll
not
bring you the
yet.
Rest of that story. When we come back, Mike Max for Chad Hartman on WCCO. Welcome back. 2:37, John Turnipseed in studio. He had second in command, Urban Ventures, with David Hahn running it there. But we've been talking about his fascinating life, and obviously there's a rebound to it, or he wouldn't be number two at Urban Ventures for the last 25 years. But where we last left you, you'd been in and out of incarceration.
Yes.
And you are running a gang, except they take the reins away from you when you start using.
Yes. Leadership in gangs, you cannot be a drug addict and lead a gang, you know. And even though they respected me and everything of that nature, you know, I'd disappear for 2 or 3 days. You can't, you have to be on call 24 hours a day. And you know, it was.
I suppose when you were in it, did you have literally a beeper, pre-cell phone, a lot of this? Did you have a beeper?
Beepers, cell phones, yeah.
Eventually cell phones, but.
Yeah. About this big, you know.
Go to a payphone, make your calls.
Yeah.
All that stuff
that
we see.
All the stuff you see.
Now, before we get to the part where you bottom out and come back into society, somebody texted and said, what happened to your dad? What happened to him?
My father died of cancer, liver, cirrhosis of the liver.
From alcoholism? Or?
Yeah, he was 60. Yeah, he made it to 60.
And you were how old?
20 years ago, I was 37.
Did you ever beat him?
No, I pulled a gun on him.
Pulled a gun on him and said?
If you hit my mother again, I'll blow your brains out. And he never hit my mother again. I was 16.
Did he leave her life?
Yes.
And that was kind of the last you saw him for a while?
Well, I would see him. Minneapolis is a small town, but we never spoke or anything.
So if you saw him walking down the street, you just keep walking?
Yep, keep walking.
But you saw him on his deathbed?
Saw him on the day my grandmother asked me to go see him, and I went.
And you hadn't spoken to him for years at this point.
Nope.
So you, why even go? What was the?
Because my grandmother and me were really close, and there was something in me that he's still my father, and I didn't believe that, you know, he was that sick until I seen him, and 4 hours before his death, I seen him.
And he's cognizant.
He could. He knew it was me. You know, he said, "Hi, Johnny."
And what did you say to him at that juncture?
I just told him, Dad, you know, I forgive you, man. You know, I forgive you. And he just said, you can't change who you are. And that was.
What did he mean by that?
I think he meant that only God could change you. Because he grew up in the church and stuff. And.
But was he talking about himself? Meaning you can't change who you are and that's who I was? Or was he talking about you?
He's saying,
don't apologize to me.
He was talking about himself, that he couldn't change who he was.
If you'd have shot him that day, would you have felt any remorse?
Yes.
You would have because it was your father, even though?
Yes. No, I wanted him to. He carried a gun also, and I wanted him to pull his gun, and he wouldn't do it.
Then it's self-defense, you mean?
Well,
at least you could justify it in your mind?
Yeah, because, you know, I got aunties. He's got 13 sisters and two brothers, that all loved him and stuff. You know, I had to have some justification because there was something inside of me that said, he's dad. He's your father. And at one time, I really loved him when I was a little kid. He used to carry me on his shoulders.
And you remembered that?
I remembered that. That's probably what saved his life.
Isn't that something? What saved his life was when you were 5 years old and he was carrying you around, huh?
Yeah.
And little did he know.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Did you ever put a hit on somebody?
Well, if I did, I wouldn't say that.
I don't know what you've been convicted for, what you haven't.
Well, I'm robbery, assaults, things of that nature.
Do you think the gang is alive and well in Minneapolis right now? Is it a different gang than what you know?
The gang that
my family's in general gang life.
Gang life is totally different than it was back then.
Because?
Because you don't have the large gangs anymore controlling things. There was only four major gangs back then.
You all knew each other?
We all knew each other.
Did you hate each other or did you do business?
We hated each other and stuff. We did business with like Latino gangs, for drugs or something like that. But there was four major black gangs and stuff, and we did not play well together.
And do you know everybody that's in every other gang?
You don't know everybody. You know the leadership.
And you're recruiting the same people?
No. Once you became one gang, you never left it.
Okay.
You couldn't do like they do today. You couldn't move from a gangster disciple to a blood. You couldn't do that.
Because you'd pay the price.
They would kill you. Plus, the other gang wouldn't trust you anyways.
Nah.
I mean, you've got enemies, there's murders that's happened and things that's happened, and they're not going to take you in, They might take you in and kill you.
They'll take you in all right,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where does the bottom out come? Where does the reform come?
The bottom out came when Tom Lydon came to my job, and it was because those kids there, and I call them kids, they were adults. They were all, I had one kid that was blind, one kid that, could not move anything but his head. I had about 20 students that I was responsible for, and they thought I was an angel. And when they came there, they started crying, and it broke me. They were crying for me. Their hero was exposed. And I felt so ashamed that right then I walked away from all criminal lifestyle because of that moment.
Okay, you can walk away from it, but it's pretty hard to be gainfully employed once everybody knows that. What happened?
Well, the company, they kept me.
They did?
They kept me.
Because?
Because I was a really good teacher. It was hard to get somebody to fill my position in the first place because I was known as a COBOL master. I knew it really well. I taught it really well. And I was willing to even change a catheter for my students, So finding somebody.
And they must have been convinced that your bad days were behind you?
Well, they needed me to finish this course because the course was 9 months long. It was 4 months into it. These students would have had to start all over again. Had to find a new instructor and all that kind of stuff, and they were not easy to find. So it was for the students' sake that they kept me. And after that, I ended up getting promoted, actually, because I didn't go to prison. That was a long story. The judge seen something different in me.
And if you had, obviously, who knows what would have happened next.
Yeah.
But you stayed out, and then Urban Ventures came when?
Urban Ventures, right before I got in all that trouble. I went to Urban Ventures because they started a fathering group. And I wanted to know how to say I'm sorry to my kids, because my boys were gangsters,
And how many kids do you have?
I had six. One of them had been beaten to death. One of them had got his leg shot off, my grandson was doing life without parole. I mean, just a bunch of stuff. And I was getting ready to go to jail again. I'm like, I'm tired, but I want to say I'm sorry to my kids. And I And so Urban Ventures was the place that I went. And little did I know, the guy that's been trying to help me for 20 years was the head of it, named Art Erickson.
Yeah.
And he took me in. Then they started working with me. I went to classes and everything, and it changed my life. It literally changed my life. I learned how to be a father. I didn't know how to be a father. I didn't know what to do. I never did anything positive, and they walked with me.
Fair to say you might have some enemies out there still at that juncture, though.
At that time, I did.
Did they leave you alone because they said as long as you are going on to a new life, or did you have to worry?
Yeah, for about 5 years. You know, I sort of stayed out of the way. In Minnesota, you can sort of stay out of the way. You don't go to bars. You don't hang out. You know, like in North Minneapolis, I couldn't hang out there. There were certain places I couldn't be. You know, one guy had shot me. I'd shot him. You know, he was still angry because, you know, he wanted to kill me still. And
no, little things like that.
Yeah, little things like that.
Yeah. Other than that, you were fine.
Yeah. And I had one of the largest families in Minnesota. And my son, Little Johnny, was pretty infamous, and people were sort of scared of him. So, you know, messing with his dad was not a good thing to do.
Okay. So you had protection, too?
Yes.
And what's become of your kids?
Well, my kids, one was beaten to death at 3 years of age by a guy my wife ran off with at the time. One has been shot 17 times, and he's in jail until he's 65. My daughters are doing fine. One of my daughters is an executive at a nonprofit, and one of my daughters is studying to be a nurse. I had two daughters and four sons. I have another son working at UPS. All of my sons got out of the gang.
They're all out?
They're all out. They're all out. We're not raising criminals anymore. And Urban Ventures has helped hundreds of people in my family, you know, through helping them get back in school. Well, you know, things of that nature, food shelves. We used to do a food shelf. So even when we changed our life, we had to figure out how to be gainfully employed, and they helped us.
So at this juncture of your life, having been living the good life on the outside for X amount of years, you feel how about your life? Do you feel guilty? Do you feel there's nothing I could do about it until somebody showed me the light? What do you feel?
I feel that it's my responsibility to leave a legacy for my family. I consider myself one of the heads of my family, and they watch me. And in the last 25 years, we've stopped raising criminals in my family. Most of my family are back in church. None of my kids are on welfare, which is a big thing. My grandchildren, I got 30 grandchildren, they're not on welfare. That's a big thing to me, you know. My sons are working, you know. My nephews are working. We're not the number one name. You know, it used to be the police, when they heard our name, it was just awful. Now they hear my name and it's like, he's a good guy. So there's been a lot of changes in my family, and I attribute that to what I learned at Urban Ventures, and I led in a different way. And I constantly work on getting kids out of gangs.
And Urban Ventures can help if somebody's out there and they see somebody, maybe their son or daughter's gone the wrong way,
yes.
They can help.
We can help. You know, I mentor a lot of kids, especially gang kids. I work with a lot. And families. We're big on families. You know, we'll take your whole family in. I teach a group. I wrote my own curriculum, wrote a book, you know, did some short films to talk about my life and not to glorify it. I'd never talk about, at 15, I had a brand new Cadillac. You know, mink coats and diamond rings and all that. You'll never see that in my pictures or anything, because I don't want kids to think anything good about gang life and stuff. You will reap what you sow.
Johnny, it was a fascinating hour. This is why I love the job that I have, but I appreciate you coming in, and I hope we can do it again, because I think that, as you know, people are saying, well, I heard everything. No, no. You only heard part of your story, and we appreciate you very much coming in, and we wish you nothing but the best at Urban Ventures, and keep changing lives as best you can.
Thank you.
Johnny Turnipseed, nice to have come in. He works at Urban Ventures with David Hahn there, and they're doing trying to keep. So if you've got a kid or a son or a daughter that's struggling, and you know why they're struggling, and it matches up with what he was talking about, get in touch either online or whatever, and they can help. And there's a lot of people out there that need help.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.